Raising the Bets is brought to you by the StarQuest Production Network and is made possible by our many generous patrons. If you'd like to support the podcast, please visit sqpn.com/give. You're listening to Raising the Bets. We're a Catholic couple raising five kids outside of Boston. Join us as we share the joys and challenges of marriage, homeschool, and our adventures near and far as we make sense of the world and experience the best parts of our culture. I'm Dom Bethanelli.
And I'm Melanie Bethanelli.
So, Melanie, the one thing I wanted to bring up right off the bat was this fun little thing that we do as a family sometimes, which I kind of keep wanting to keep doing a little more of, which is
Okay. We're
all Star Wars fans. And so right. At some point, I forget how long ago it was, I kind of started labeling the kids Red 1 for Bella, Red 2 for Sophie, Red 3 for Ben, Red 4 for Anthony, and Lucy gets to be Red 5, which was Luke Skywalker. And of course, I'm Red Leader. I don't know what you are, but
I'm not.
You're not participating.
No.
So the fun thing was tonight with prayers, we're trying to make sure everyone's ready to go. So I did the roll call. Red Squadron, report in. Red 1 reporting in. Red 2 reporting in. Red 3 standing by. They all did it. Except Anthony was like,
Anthony does not like this game.
He doesn't like being Red 4 because he's like, who's Red 4? Like, Red 2 is Wedge.
Red 4 doesn't have a personal name and he dies without like really getting any good lines or anything. Yeah. And so he feels like all the other kids have cool characters.
Yeah.
Why is he stuck with the boring guy?
Red 3 was Biggs Darklighter. Red 5 was Luke. I'm not sure. Well, I mean, Bella doesn't seem to mind that Red 1 doesn't have a name either.
But Bella's also much more mature.
Yeah. So I pulled up Wikipedia, which is the Star Wars wiki. And we looked up who was Red 4. Now, there were several Red 4s because they kept dying. But we settled on a Red 4 pilot who fought at the Battle of Yavin, whose name was apparently Bastion. Like Sebastian.
Well, I'm not sure if settled is the right word, but
he seemed okay with it. He seemed better.
We'll see if he remembers that feeling better next time. Like, I'm not convinced that that's solved the problem, but you
probably
know.
Not. But it's a fun thing. It's a way to get him to sound off when we're trying to get them all focused. So what have we been doing? This has been a fun week. If listeners would recall, last week we had just dropped off the oldest three at Scout Summer Camp. And it was just you and me and the two little ones.
Yep.
Now, just in general, what was it like to not have your three oldest kids with you for away for a whole week incommunicado for the first time?
Okay. In general, I mean, I kept busy and it was nice to have quiet. Like,
yeah.
I will say that. I really missed them. It was really hard. I kept finding myself like, I wonder what they're eating. I wonder what they're doing. I hope that they're sleeping okay. I spent a lot of time praying for them. Like, every time I thought about them, I was just like, take care of them.
I hope they're not having anxiety. They're not.
Ew. Okay, I did not expect that dropping them off would be quite as hard as it was.
Right. We talked a little bit about it last time, but yeah.
And I knew that they would have a great time. And we kept getting pictures. One of the scout moms who was camping with the girls at their site sent lots of pictures and lots of little reports of what they were doing. So it wasn't like they were completely incommunicado. I couldn't communicate with them, but they were, getting
at least see what they were doing. Yeah.
Ben did send a few pictures. He was doing the photography merit badge and he did send
he had his non-phone, no phone plan with him. And so there was Wi-Fi there. And so he could send some photos.
They weren't supposed to have devices with them. He brought his mostly just so he could listen to audiobooks to fall asleep.
And because he's doing the photography merit badge and I wasn't giving him the good camera to take with him.
Because the good camera is a really good camera.
It would be too expensive to put in the hands of a scout.
In the future, we should probably invest in a medium good camera for the kids who want to do photography or and stuff.
Or, hear me out.
No, I know where kidding. This is going.
I'm just kidding. Yes, we should have a camera that they could use for that sort of thing. We had point-and-shoot cameras before.
Long ago and far away.
Well, we gave them to Bella, and she eventually ended up breaking all of them.
Yes.
They broke down. They were older cameras. Anyway, so the kids were away for the week, and so there was just you and me and the two youngest ones, and I wanted to make sure that it was a good, fun week for the youngest ones, because we're probably not going to be able to take a vacation week this year because of all the various things. And so this was sort of vacation. So one thing that we talked about doing was me taking the two, Anthony and Lucy, camping for a period of time.
Right.
And I had worked hard to kind of get caught up in all my work so I could take a couple of days off and not worry about it. I just kept not booking the...
Uh-huh.
Because I was nervous about taking them camping, especially if the weather was going to be bad. And so I kept putting it off until the day before. Was it Monday?
Uh-huh.
You finally told me to...
I was just like, you're going to regret it if you don't do this, right. So do it.
Yeah, so I went and...
I didn't have any ulterior motives at all. It was not at all about me wanting to have some quiet time. Yeah. No, that was not at all part of my calculation. It had
nothing to do with the introvert wanting to have the house alone for at least more than 24 hours. So the part of the problem was I didn't know where to go. And so I went on thedirt.com, the D-Y-R-T, which is...
D-Y-R-T?
Yeah, because, you know, the internet. And it's sort of a Yelp for campgrounds.
Okay.
It's they've got an app and all this stuff. So I kind of started looking around, and I was looking at stuff that was down toward... So the kids' summer camp was on Cape Cod in Yarmouthport. So I wanted something that was sort of in that direction in case we needed to go for whatever reasons, in case something came up and we needed to pick up a kid or something. I didn't want to be in New Hampshire or Maine or whatever.
Right.
So I found one. I found a couple of them. One was like $88 a night, and I'm like, that's way too expensive. And there's one of these, like, the Jellystone Resorts.
Uh-huh.
You know Jellystone Resorts? They're, like, all over the country.
I've heard of it.
They're these fancy places. Jellystone is from the old Yogi Bear cartoons. Right.
My family were strictly state and national park campers. My parents refused to camp in any place that wasn't...
You guys were out in the West. I mean, I was actually had been looking at a state park. The problem is you can't just drive up to state parks. You have to reserve in advance.
Right
now because of everything. But this one I could book online. So I found one, Sandy Pond campground. I kept saying the wrong thing. Sandy Pines, Sandy Pond, in Plymouth.
Right.
And, for 40 something bucks. And so I booked it. It was a nice campground. It wasn't like, it wasn't bad at all. It was just basic. I picked a tent site that was sort of on the edge. That's my tip, because we tent a lot. We only tent. We don't have a camper. I tried to pick ones that are on the edge so that there's nobody behind maybe someone only on one side. So this one was actually separated by the road. It was, and there was like nobody else was there midweek. It was pretty quiet. Nobody in the tent area with us, and except a guy came in late, so I guess there was one person, but he was pretty quiet. And it was nice, open pine needles on the ground, flat, not, you know, no roots and rocks underneath, so it was really comfortable on the ground. They had access to a pond, so there was a pond area that was nice.
The sandy pond
part of that. bugs weren't too bad. I had the thermocell smoker thingy, not smoker, but the thermocell bug repellent. It's really good. I should put a link in the show notes because it's really awesome. And so it was about an hour away. We drove down. We took our time. Actually, I went back roads. I don't know if I told you that. I drove, instead of getting on the highway, which is, I mean, it's really like a straight shot down Route 3. I took the back roads.
Right.
Just because for fun. Why not? We were in a hurry. We couldn't check until 1. We left about 11. We beautiful back roads. Like that part of Massachusetts, in fact, a lot of Massachusetts, is really gorgeous. a lot of horse farms and stuff.
Right.
Really kind of nice. So we got down there, we had some lunch, and then we checked in, and I had all the gear from the, I just grabbed all the boxes. So all of our camping gear is, are in Plano boxes. Plano is a brand, locking hard plastic boxes. And so I just threw them all in the back of the van, and they had their backpacks that you helped them pack. And
I don't know that I actually helped them.
Oh yeah. I mean, they had their stuff. They were sufficient.
They really just needed a change of clothes and
yep.
Swimsuits.
We had some, I packed some food. So we had sandwiches for lunch. I had a steak that I brought for dinner, steak and potatoes. And for breakfast, I brought bacon and English muffins and fruit. We had fruit for everything. And then we were going to get lunch on the way home the next day, just overnight. It was really good. We got down, we set everything up, we went swimming. It was really nice sandy,
uh-huh.
Hence the name, Sandy Pond. And it was like, there was like literally hardly anyone there. It was really wild. It was very few people. And there was a lot of campers that are obviously like seasonals, like people keep their camper there year round, and they had cabins and stuff. So it was nice. I would definitely go back to this place again, not fancy at all, but it was nice. And so the next day when we got up, I made them some breakfast. We packed up. We went for a hike around the campground. There's some trails, which was nice. A lot of birds in the area, so that was nice. Big flock of turkeys. We just walked around the campground. That was kind of fun. And then we drove down. We weren't ready to come home. It was too early. I knew you wouldn't want to see us for a bit. So we drove. I kind of just drove toward the Cape Cod Canal, just in that direction.
Yeah.
We ended up like stopping at, there's several scenic overlooks, scenic spots along. Stopped at one that was like totally overgrown. Like there was nothing to see. It was just like totally overgrown. We stopped at another one, was a high point viewpoint over the canal. And that was nice looking. But further along, there's a herring run.
I think that's the one we've been to.
Yes. We've been to this place before, and we got out and there's like stairs down to a path that follows the canal that you can walk or bike or skate along the whole length of the canal. And we went down there and we hung out there. They played in the rocks by the way, watched the boats and ships go through the canal.
Cape Cod Canal, it's fun.
It is fun. It was kind of cool. And then we kind of went further down, and then there's a state park. Oh, what is it called?
Isn't it called Cape Cod Canal State Park?
No, Scusset Beach.
Oh, right.
Scusset Beach State Park, State Reservation, I figure it was. There's a campground there, which might be something to check out. They also had a fishing pier, and there's a beach and then a jetty with a lighthouse. It was like $14 to park for the day. I didn't want to pay for that, so I just kind of pulled up to the fishing pier. We got out, we walked around the pier, then got in the van and went to go get lunch because they were hungry. And we stopped at a clam shack, which was tricky. I didn't mention, like, it's right there along the canal, and you have to kind of pull in. Like it's like 50 miles an hour is the speed limit.
Uh-huh.
And you got to pull in quick and then slow down quick to the place. And I'm in the big van, and then you got to find a place to park. And it was, they actually had like, no, please, you can't park there. You're blocking things. You got to go park over there. I'm like, okay. But I was afraid I was going to be sticking out and blocking things, but okay. So I had to move the van. And so we had to figure out what to get. Lucy, even though she's over her allergies, because of the allergies, she's become a very picky eater.
Yeah. Well, which is ironic because she was the least picky toddler we had.
Well, she was the easiest going because, you know, with her, even with her allergies, she didn't complain that when she couldn't have things. Well, now she doesn't want the things.
She's making up for lost time.
Yes.
And how?
So I ended up getting her a fish sandwich, which she didn't eat the bread. She just ate the fish. She ate half of it and the fries.
She will usually eat all of the fries.
Yeah. I got Anthony a lobster roll. And he ate the lobster, not the roll, and some of the fries. And then I got a quart of fried clams, which was more than I needed to get. I always get way too many fried clams.
You always get too many fried clams.
I'm hungry when I'm ordering. That's the worst time for me to order things. I'm like, oh, I'm going to really want that. I was thinking like, oh, I'll share the lobster roll with Anthony, but that wasn't going to happen. I did get a bite of lobster from him.
Oh, well, that was nice.
It was really good. It was a good place. It was a family run place, and I don't remember the name of it off the top of my head, but it's right along the Cape Cod Canal, if you're ever down that area. So then we, after lunch, we packed up and came home, and we were home by 2:30, 3, so.
Something like that.
A little over, like, 26 hours, 28 hours, maybe.
Something like that.
Yeah. So it was a nice little jaunt. I didn't mention them for dinner the night before. So I brought a steak. So I cooked a steak over the fire, and that was pretty good. And I tried to do baked potatoes in the fire. That never works for me. Even with the scouts, that never works. Like we've now on two separate camping trips with the scouts, they've tried to do the potatoes and they end up throwing them away because they take way too long to cook. When you wrap them in foil and throw them in the fire, you just have to do it like hours in advance. So I ended up pulling them out of the fire, slicing them up thin, and cooking them in a skillet that I brought.
And it's a good thing you had a skillet.
Yeah. I wish I'd brought ketchup. I did not bring ketchup. But it worked out.
I don't understand putting ketchup on.
It's potatoes, ketchup. They go together.
No. Only on french fries.
In any case, even Anthony had some, which is, you know, good, because he doesn't usually eat potatoes. So, yeah, so we had a good time. I'm glad we did it. It was a nice chance for me to spend some time with just them. And you got some time alone to do things here. You got your introvert's staycation.
Yeah, I did a lot of cleaning and organizing and cleaning and more cleaning.
Mm-hmm.
I pulled everything off of one of the shelves in the living room. And dusted it and reorganized it.
It hadn't been reorganized in years. It needed it. It had been set up so that all of the stuff we didn't want little children to play with were on the top shelves. But now they're old enough and they're still having to climb up to the top shelves to get them.
Yeah, kind of ridiculous.
Yeah.
So, I put books up on the top shelves and moved the games and puzzles down lower. And just like the area between the couch and the shelf had sort of become a place where things fell and then didn't get picked up, and it was bad.
Yes, the yarn that got all mixed up with everything. Yeah.
Oh yeah, there was an entire box full of balls of yarn that got like dumped and then tangled in with the wires and the cords and everything. It was a mess.
Yeah.
And then I pulled off all the shelves that we keep our school and art supplies on in the dining room, and I vacuumed them. They book back right up onto the table, and so you can imagine that like bits of food and crumbs and stuff get all in the.
I don't know how the kids managed to get all the Cheerios and stuff on the shelves, but they do.
They do. And I did some, you know, school planning, not as much as I would have liked, and I didn't get as much cleaning done as I would have liked, but it's better. Like,
right.
Noticeable dents in some of the problem areas.
You spent one afternoon in the boys' room with Lucy and Anthony.
After they came back, we did spend Friday afternoon. I challenged them. I said, okay, I want you to each give me an hour of cleaning in your bedrooms, because the bedrooms were just, they had made huge messes and they hadn't really cleaned up all week.
Oh, if the older two girls had come home to that mess.
It was frightful. I said, you cannot have your sisters come home from a week at camp and your brother to this kind of mess. That's just unacceptable.
Right.
So they kind of freaked out. I finally convinced Lucy that I could set a timer for 20 minutes and then she could do 20 minutes of cleaning and then 20 minutes off and 20 minutes cleaning and 20 minutes off. So she did 20 minutes and she took 20 minutes off. Then she cleaned about
the Lucy Pomodoro method.
Right. Then she cleaned about 10 minutes, maybe 15, and then just was like, I can't think of anything more to do. I'm stuck. And also I'm hungry and I'm tired. And I'm just she stopped and had a snack and we paused her timer and then she never went back to it. But the room was pretty good. I mean, 30 minutes of work had cleared off most of the mess.
Okay.
And then Anthony was just like, he couldn't even figure out how to get started. So I said, okay, well, I'm going to set a timer for 20 minutes and I'll go in and I'll work with you for 20 minutes. And I fully intended to only work for 20 minutes. But then, as often happens, we got like 20 minutes in and the timer went off. And I'm like, do you guys want to stop and take a break? Or do you want to just like kind of keep going because we've got a good momentum? And they're like, oh, well, let's keep going.
Right.
So we worked a good hour or so.
Momentum is everything. It's like just getting started is the big thing.
And I mean, we did not tackle like pulling everything out from under the bed and the closet, and Anthony's mountain of clothes is still a mountain of clothes. And there's a couple of bags with like, we just sort of were throwing stuff into paper bags. Like, I don't know where this goes, so we're just going to throw it into the bag. We did not actually go through the bags afterward to put things away.
That still needs to be done. Yeah.
But you could see the floor. Yeah. Yes. Ben was happy when he got home that he could see the bedroom floor and it wasn't a sea of Lego. Of course.
Which it was.
Now.
It's back
to sea of Lego. Of course. Because, you know, he's been home for more than 24 hours.
So immediately all the Legos must come out. Of course, we didn't make them work all the time. They also got to watch movies every day.
We didn't make them work at all. Except for like that.
That afternoon.
The right. Friday afternoon. They're coming home tomorrow. We've got to get this place in order.
I mean, they watched the How to Train Your Dragon series, like 1, 2, and 3, although they never got to 4. There's a fourth movie, a How to Train Your Dragon movie.
Right.
But they never got to that one.
They didn't get to 4. But they also watched Inside Out.
Yes.
And,
Lucy wasn't as impressed by that, I think.
She said it was okay.
It was okay. So
I don't know. She didn't give me a fuller review.
Yeah.
But yeah, they
I think they had fun. I mean, it was interesting cooking for the four of us. So a lot less.
Just less food.
Less food. It was very different. Yeah. It was quieter. It was a different pace. Yeah. It was very different. And then the four of us we did the grocery shopping together. That was the first time you've been in. Doing the family grocery shopping since last year, since your surgery in last November.
Right.
So that was interesting, both of us, because I had developed a certain method and rhythm going with Isabella every week, and you had your own method. I think we clashed at first. It was a bit of a, no, we should be doing it this way. No, we do it this way. Okay, we'll do it your way. It was just an adaptation. It'll be me and Bella again next week, and Sophie. I'm gonna bring Sophie this time.
She'll like that.
She wanted to go last time and couldn't, or what? Yeah, whatever. And so Saturday, the pickup was at 9:30. I think it was supposed to be.
Yeah.
So of course
we got there at 9:30, and then we waited around for like another hour, and a half
hour. No.
It felt forever.
It was nowhere near as long as the dropping them off took.
No, but they had to check out, and they had to check out at multiple stations.
Right, they had to get a signature on a checkout sheet from each station.
Which I really appreciated that the checkout process was thorough. They made sure that the kids had done all of their duties.
That they picked up their medicine and had seen the medical director.
I mean,
their first
checkout was like the first thing was cleaning up your campsite and then checking in with the troop and making sure they'd done all their troop duties, checking the lost and found, checking out with the nurse.
Right. And the final thing was getting a sign off from the scoutmaster.
Yeah. So they made sure that they checked in with everybody they needed to check in with and that nobody was like forgetting important things and getting overlooked. Nothing got overlooked.
Now, so we left the house around 8:15, I think 8:20. We got there at 9:30. Yeah. So it was it's really only an hour something drive when there's not a lot of traffic. Now, a big thing to mention is Hurricane Henry had been coming. You probably saw it in the news. And so a lot of people who had been planning to go to the Cape had not. I can imagine. We'll talk about the Hurricane Henry in a second. I can imagine those people who didn't go to their vacations this weekend might be a little annoyed. But in any case, there was not much traffic going down. But as we got to the bridge over the canal, we saw a semi versus minivan accident had occurred.
Yeah, there was a semi pulled over that whose fender looked damaged, and there was a minivan up on a flatbed trailer.
Yeah, on a wrecker.
And the minivan looked like the entire side was crumpled in.
Somebody got in somebody else's blind spot, I think. But in any case, that had caused a backup that was like eight miles long getting off the Cape. There's usually a backup getting off the Cape to begin with.
Well, it was 8 miles long by the time we were trying to get off.
Right. It was starting to back up. It was pretty long.
It was 3 miles of backup, I think, as we were driving the other direction. We passed like 3 miles of cars already stopped. And I'm thinking that's only going to get longer.
There's only two bridges off the Cape. There's the Sagamore Bridge and the Bourne Bridge. And by the time we got to the scout camp, looking at the maps, they were both saying there was like 2.5 hours to get home from whichever direction we went.
So I said, Anthony and Lucy were, by the time we got to camp, were already complaining about being hungry. Lucy hadn't really eaten breakfast and Anthony had only had a bowl of Cheerios for breakfast.
Right.
And they quickly tore through the couple of granola bars I'd stuck in my bag.
Yes.
I did actually, you know, bring granola bars, just not enough
to satisfy the hungry horrors.
Yeah. So I said,
let's find some place.
Let's go find some place where we can sit down and eat a very long, leisurely.
So here we are, Cape Cod, Saturday morning.
Yeah.
Breakfast time or brunch time.
Brunch.
Trying to find a place to eat for 7 people. Like, that's just a recipe for that. Like, the first place we went, they said, oh, 7 people, it's going to be over an hour. Wait, like more than an hour. So we're like, get back in the car, drive down the road. Okay, let's check this place. I was a little iffy on it.
The second place, I think if there hadn't been 2 women who were standing outside looking very disgruntled, holding takeout boxes, and one of them demanding her money back, I might have waited. Like, it didn't look like there was a long wait, but she was demanding her money back and she looked very unhappy. And I'm thinking, I'm not sure I want to give this place a chance,
which I feel bad about because it could have been the woman's problem as much as the place. So we went down the road a little more and we found the Pancake Man, and there was a line out the door, but we said, that I'm not driving any further.
You said, yeah. I would have been willing to keep trying, but
by that point I was frustrated. So we pulled in, got in line. It didn't take long.
Yeah,
20
the
minutes,
line
25.
The line wasn't super long.
Yeah, yeah. There was this is the thing. If we're a couple, if we're 2 people, or if we're 2 people and 2 kids, even getting into places is like a snap. Okay. Oh yeah, 15 minutes, 20 minutes. There's 7 of us. Oh, you're a big party. That's going to be an hour. I mean, that's the way it is when you have a big family. So, but this wasn't that bad. They actually explained, like, because of COVID, they didn't get all of the summertime help that they usually get. So things are going to take a little longer. They're shorthanded in the kitchen. Please be patient. It wasn't that bad.
No. The woman looked like she had her spiel down. She was used to saying it every day.
Right.
It was the ritual.
Our waitress was an older lady, like I'd say 60s, maybe 70s. She did okay. She wasn't great at her job, let's just say. I mean, I've had a better way, but she was fine. She, you know, forgot my toast and she disappeared for long periods because I think she had to go rest her feet, I think she said, take a breather. But she was fine. It was expensive, as you'd expect at a breakfast place in a touristy area, but it was more than I wish I had had to spend.
Yeah. Thanks, AutoWreck.
For what?
Thanks to the wreck.
Oh, the AutoWreck. Right. We ended up spending all that money.
I think that we would have stopped for food regardless, but if there hadn't been the backup on the bridge,
we might not have stopped on Cape Cod. We would have stopped somewhere closer to home.
Somewhere closer to home and maybe somewhere like more fast foody.
Yeah, probably. So, yeah, I mean, I got hash and eggs and with home fries and was like this tiny bit of home fries. It's just, you know, you side order all the breakfast places, side order bacon. You get like 2 slices of bacon for $4 or something. Like, I can get a whole package of bacon for that. Like, that is way more profit than is just, I think, the profit margin on that sort of thing. Anyway, but it was fine. And we got to hear all the stories and they did great. The kids did good. I mean, it wasn't completely smooth sailing the whole way through. There were times, like all 3 of them had said, there were times where they kind of felt a little overwhelmed or they were homesick, but they powered through it.
But they also had great stories the very kind adults who helped them and listened to them when they were feeling homesick and overwhelmed and somebody had a little stomach bug.
And universally, all the adults would say, oh, your kids are great. You have really excellent kids. You should be proud of them. Everyone said that. So they also talked about Sophie eating. That girl, she can sock it away.
They said that she ate more than anyone else in camp, which is pretty impressive given the number of teenage boys in this camp.
Yes, older teenage boys.
Right.
Sophie's got a high metabolism.
She does.
I mean, it's not like she's big. She's really...
Well, yeah, they were saying, like, where did she put it all?
Yeah, yeah. So funny.
They also had a nice camp newsletter that they printed every day. So, which was...
It was kind of fun. We got to see it a couple times from pictures. But I wish they had, like, a site. Like, some camps, they have a website where pictures are posted for parents to follow along.
It would have been nice if they had simultaneously posted the camp newsletter and some photos on, like, a Facebook page or something.
Yeah, that would have been good. Sophie earned 4 merit badges, which is awesome.
Yeah, I was impressed.
Yeah, and Bella, I'm not sure... Bella and Ben are both unsure of exactly how many they earned. They all worked on 4 badges.
But. Yeah, I think that there were some unfinished requirements for, like, the birding merit badge that they both did. And Bella said the game design merit badge required more people to play their game.
Right.
So I think the counselor just needs to find somebody to play the game and then he can sign off on it having been done.
Right.
It's just like they can't. And until somebody's actually played the game, who's not one of them,
right?
It doesn't count.
It is really neat. They're sort of in the crowd now. So they had all these traditions that get passed down. So anytime anyone ever says waterfront, they have to yell wet and wild, and you know this all these sort of in jokes in you know traditions that they're now part of. And so it's really kind of cool to see them. I don't know. It feels like they all matured so much in that course of a week. They seemed so much older when they came back.
They did.
So pretty awesome. So home, and then we've been recovering. And then the last thing to talk about really is about the Hurricane Henry.
The hurricane that wasn't.
The hurricane. I thought we the way the weathermen were talking about it, I thought we were going to lose power. We're going to have wind gusts of up to 50 miles an hour. Like, one of the sunflower plants got knocked over today. I was sitting outside in my lawn chair reading, and it was gusty. You know, maybe wind gusts up to 25 miles an hour or 30 miles an hour the most today, early on.
We've had worse thunderstorms this summer, many worse thunderstorms.
I gauge it by did the so we have a gazebo thing, like a sunshade, like a big metal sun covering over the patio. It's that's only secured to the ground by straps. I've got metal straps holding it down. And if that thing moves in the wind, that's a windy day. Like it'll get picked up and pushed over.
That's a stormy day.
That's what I was expecting. If this had been what they were predicting, that thing would have moved. It didn't move a bit.
I was skeptical that we were going to get anything, and I was right.
Well, you haven't lived through. I remember the perfect storm of '92, and I remember Hurricane Bob and Hurricane Gloria. I've lived through big storms that have blown through. We get them. We haven't had one here in a long time. Probably, I mean, the last hurricane that made landfall in New England was in 2005. So there was that one. And then we had Irene here. We were living here a few years ago. But other than that, I don't think you've been through the big ones. Bob was a big one. That was 30 years ago. So, yeah, it was a big nothing burger. Which I'm not sad that we didn't lose power, but it was annoying that, they got everyone all hyped up and, Rhode Island and Connecticut got slammed. It went because that's where it went through. And we're supposed to get it tomorrow. It's going to hook back around again as a, storms, but rainstorms, but nothing too big. So that was the week. And we'll see where we're going, what's going on this week. I'm not sure if we've got anything on the
Planning for school to start week after next.
That's right.
I mean, they could probably start school tomorrow, but I figured that after a week at camp, they needed some downtime.
Decompression. Yeah. Some easing back into things.
So we're basically taking this week off, and then we'll start back next week.
Just like all the public schools here, that's when they'll start anyway. So they're on the public school schedule. So let's talk about what we've been eating. So I mentioned some of the food I cooked in camping, but I did make a recipe the other day. When we went to the grocery store, they had short ribs on sale, like a pretty good sale on it. It was one of those things, like the expiration date is getting near, so we're selling it at a much lower price. So I picked up some short ribs, and there was this recipe for Korean grilled short ribs, or kalbi, that I wanted to check out. And what's interesting about it is it uses a marinade, and the marinade includes a pear.
Uh-huh.
Like you take a pear, garlic, ginger, soy, sesame oil, sugar, and rice vinegar. Then you process it all up, you know, like in a immersion. I use the immersion blender. You can use a food processor, and then you add some scallions, and then that's the marinade for the meat, which you kind of debone and then slice on a bias, and then flatten. So it's mm-hmm. really about cooking these flat pieces of meat. Now, we didn't have, it wants you to marinate them for at least 4 hours, but we didn't have 4 hours.
No.
More than an hour.
The flavor was great. It wasn't as tender as it could have been if you'd marinated it longer.
Yeah. I love the flavor of the marinade. Like if you add some more liquid to it, you could make that into a dressing for like a salad dressing or a slaw dressing. I mean, I really... really like that flavor. It was really good. And the pear, you can't taste the pear. The pear adds some sweetness.
Right.
Just a little bit. So it was really good.
And probably some texture, too.
There's probably some texture to that. And I grill it up on the grill. It grilled pretty quickly. And we had it with rice and some kimchi, and it was good.
The kimchi was really good.
Yeah, the Sungja is the brand of kimchi that that we had. I have to get some more of it because that's a really good brand. It was a good recipe. I'll put the link, show notes. It's Cook's Illustrated, and I'm not sure when they have short ribs on sale again. I'll have to pick some up and definitely make this again. Yeah, that's it for cooking stuff. We had Taco Sunday today, though.
Yep.
Taco Sunday. We've talked about our tacos, but
my tacos are the best.
Yes, yeah. You are expert at them now. So let's talk about what we've been reading. I didn't watch anything new, that needed to be talked about. I watched Doctor Who, and I watched, you know, Star Trek Lower Decks.
The Marvel. What if
the latest episode of What If?
I liked that one.
So this is one that imagines what if T'Challa, the Black Panther, had become Star-Lord, essentially, yes. For the Guardians of the Galaxy.
I thought it was a really fun crossover.
Okay. At first, you weren't sure that you want to watch it because no Chadwick Boseman, because he had died.
Yeah.
It turns out he had recorded this before he died. And it was, I got to tell you, it was kind of awesome because he's a kind of an awesome guy.
Chadwick Boseman was really awesome.
A friend of yours knew him in acting, that she was in acting.
When they were both getting started.
Yeah. We talked about that when he passed away. And so hearing him in the role again was pretty awesome. And just the character, he's kind of like a little like Ted Lasso. He's just such a good guy. He's so good that he convinced Thanos.
Spoilers.
I know, I wouldn't want to ruin it if you haven't watched it yet, but definitely check it out. It's an interesting take on how they have a lot of the actors. They had Karen Gillan. They had Josh Brolin. I'm trying to remember his name. They had Kurt Russell shows up. They had who's the Benicio del Toro as the collector. I mean, they had all these people from the original roles. Interestingly, I don't think that was Chris Pratt as Star-Lord, as the actual Star-Lord.
I don't know.
I don't know if that was his voice. I was listening for it. I have to go back and double check.
I wasn't paying close enough attention.
Yeah. But the other guy, who worked for Thanos' kid, not kid, the, you remember, the guy who was being very fanboyish toward T'Challa.
Oh, yeah.
It's an African name, and I can never remember it, but the actor, and he was in it. Also the same guy who plays Yondu. Like, they had all the same actors, so it was really great.
It was a fun story. I really liked it.
I'm enjoying the What If. I like this one a little bit better than the Captain America, Captain Britain one. A little bit better.
Peggy Carter. Marvel.
Yeah, it was okay. That one was okay. This was really good. I really like this one. So I'm curious to see where they go from here, not whether they can, whether it'll be as good or whatnot. But yeah, that's fun. But I finished a book. I read a book called All About the Burger by Seth Gonzalez. Now, it's a little bit misnamed because it's not a book all about the burger. It's a book all about the burger joints.
Right.
I mean, he talks a little bit about the history of the hamburger in the beginning, the first chapter. But this is really a book about burger chains.
Well, yeah,
burger
because restaurants. There's not that much to say about burger. Like,
you could talk about, if this were Mark Kurlansky, there'd be a lot of about the socio-political and the cultural ramifications and where the burger stands now in our culture. I mean, there would be a lot. You would talk about the Impossible Burger and how that confronts and turkey burgers. And there would have been a whole lot more. This was a survey of the history of burger joints. And when I say survey, it was like these very short, there was a whole chapter on McDonald's. Okay. There was a whole chapter on the burger wars, but in the of the 1980s, the, you know, between Burger King, Wendy's, and McDonald's. And the other chapters were all like short vignettes, short little explainers of this chain, who started it, when did it start, you know, where it went, where it is now. And it was kind of frustrating because there was no depth to any of it. Like, when you get to, like, oh, that's an interesting story, tell me more. Nope, we're moving on. Like, there was just no, there was no, he didn't dig beyond the surface on a lot of the stuff. And it was very kind of annoying, you know? It was like, why did that happen? How did he get that guy to do that? Like, you tell he didn't go interview people and dig into the research. He just, you know, this is what. And the book comes out of his blog called Burger Beast. And I think that's kind of, it shows in that.
It felt like a blog.
It felt like a compilation of blog posts. So, I mean, so it was all right. I got it. It was like the Amazon had a sale on it. It was like $1.99 or something. And if you like Mark Kurlansky's books, you would like this. And Michael Pollan. So I'm like, okay, I'll give it a shot.
And he was no Mark Kurlansky.
He was no Mark Kurlansky. So it was all right for $1.99. I mean, I learned some stuff about burger joints and the, you know, where the burger places came from and that sort of thing. But meh, it was all right. I wish it was more. How about you?
So I read a juvenile novel called The Reb in the Redcoats by Constance Savory. And I had read and really enjoyed her book Enemy Brothers, which was set in World War II. This one obviously is set in Revolutionary War era, but it's in England. So it follows a group of kids who encounter a redcoat. Interestingly enough, it takes place in the same house as the World War II Enemy Brothers book, the White Priory. So it's basically this house has been in this family for generations and generations and generations.
Oh, interesting.
So it's the same family, but like several hundred years earlier.
Okay.
So basically the story is that a young Revolutionary War soldier on his way to France.
France?
Right. Gets captured, and he is sort of stationed with this family. Because he's an officer and a gentleman, so he's not in with the enlisted men.
Right.
And the it's kind of confusing. The kids don't actually belong to the house. Like, this is their mom's parents' house. But her parents are sick and her husband's away at war, so she's taken her kids and gone to her parents' house.
Right.
And the person who's actually in charge of the prisoner is the mother's brother, who has been in fighting in the Revolutionary War, but was wounded and so has been sort of sent home to recuperate. And so he's been sort of left now on, you know, taking care of prisoner duty. And the Reb in question has already performed several escape attempts, but he keeps getting foiled by his unfortunate friend who just cannot seem to escape. He's just like a klutz and a doofus. And so now they're both stuck. And so the kids befriend him. The uncle at first doesn't really want them to have anything to do with him, but they're kids.
Right.
And eventually there's a reconciliation. The uncle, who is very angry and hates all Americans, comes to find that he has something in common with the Reb. It was not quite as good as Enemy Brothers, which was told from the point of view of the German, the boy who had been raised in Germany. But it had some of the same themes, the sort of reconciliation of people on different sides of a war and finding common ground. There was a really nice hook in that the little girl was given a doll by a family friend who had come back from the war. Like, he had sort of looted the house and taken the girl's doll, which had been left behind. And she feels really horrified and guilty, like, this is some other girl's doll and you've given it to me. I don't want her. But she feels sort of an obligation to take care of the doll, but hoping that she can reunite the doll with her owner.
Mm.
Hook, it turns out, of course, that the doll belongs to somebody that the Reb actually knows. He recognizes the doll.
Okay. Yeah.
Implausible,
but okay.
Implausible, but sure. So again, it was not like the most plausible story. There were a lot of coincidences.
Yeah.
But it feels like that's kind of acceptable in a kid's book, where it might not be acceptable in an adult novel.
Sure.
And it was really, it was a good story. I liked all the characters. I liked the twists. I liked the guy who's constantly escaping. And the friendships. It was really good.
Good. The Reb and the Redcoats.
The Reb and the Redcoats. So if you're looking for kids' books about the Revolutionary War that have a different twist, that are told from the British point of view, this is a really great one. It's perfect for kids really into, you know, elementary school level. And I think even older kids might enjoy it.
Some even middle grade.
Yeah. I would say elementary to middle school.
What age group is like Johnny Tremaine?
That's Johnny Tremaine grade, is usually considered a middle grade novel. It's got some violence, like when he hurts his hand. And
oh yeah,
he gets involved in some battles. This one is a lot gentler than Johnny Tremaine. I would say that this would be a good one for kids who are finding Johnny Tremaine a little bit too traumatic. Reb and the Redcoats is a good, gentle book about the war.
All right, so let's talk about the Sunday Mass readings. Because of the dire hurricane warnings, we watched Mass from home because I was afraid of taking the van out in the winds of the hurricane force winds, which were nothing. Can you tell I'm a little annoyed? But so we watched the Mass on Catholic TV, and this week's readings, so because of last week was the Assumption. We didn't actually read what the gospel reading would have been. John 6:53 would have been my flesh is true food, my blood is true drink. We didn't get that this year.
We got the rest of the bread of life discourse, but we didn't get.
Right. It's kind of funny just how it's because of the assumption we just kind of skip over that. I just thought that was kind of interesting. So what we get is this is the aftermath. So the first reading is from Joshua, and this is basically where Joshua says, it's time to decide. Who are you going to serve? Make up your minds. As for me and my house, we will serve the Lord. And
one of my favorite readings. Yes. But I heard Bella sighing and saying, oh, I love that. And it is. I mean, it's a beautiful moment in Joshua where, you know, there comes a point where you have to make a decision. You have to decide where your loyalties lie. You can't just be wishy-washy anymore.
Right. Well, and it was about remaining a distinct peoples. They'd entered the land of Canaan, and which had its own gods, its own culture, its own ways. And so the question is that he's putting to them is, will you assimilate or will you remain separate? And remember, remaining separate in Egypt is what caused their misery. That brought them to this point.
But also, an artifact of ancient Middle Eastern religions was that gods were gods of particular places. So the assumption was that if you moved to a particular place, the gods of that place became your gods.
Right.
Like, because, you know, they're the god of this particular mountain. And so you're worshiping right. where you are.
Like this river, this. Yeah.
Right. So gods are gods of places. Whereas what God is trying to do with his people is saying, I'm not a god of a place. I'm a god of a people. You right. are my people and I am your God. It doesn't matter where you are. I am with you.
Right.
It's a personal relationship as opposed to a geographic relationship.
And the people seemed to have finally gotten the message. Like, no, far be it from us to forsake the Lord who brought us out of Egypt and did all the miracles and
made us wander around in the desert for 40 years for doubting him.
Right.
Subtext.
Right, exactly. So who will you serve? And then the second reading is Ephesians 5, that infamous reading. Wives, be subordinate to your husbands. But also, husbands, love your wives, even as Christ loved the church. How did Christ love the church? Oh, that's right. He died for the church. So, you know, being subordinate to your husband, if you're following this reading, your husband is going to treat you to the point of sacrificing his life for you. So
it's a reciprocal relationship. And if right. one person falls down on that it's not yeah. reciprocal.
And it's connected. Again, who will you serve? You know, will you serve God? Will you serve one another? Will you serve one another seeing Christ in each other? That's really, I think, what this reading is about. And then the gospel, of course, is Jesus has dropped the truth bomb on them about the Eucharist. And a lot of the disciples saying, okay, this saying is hard. Who can accept it? And Jesus says, no, guys, I'm only telling you a parable here. I don't really mean you need to. No, of course not. If this was just another parable, if he was speaking symbolically, he would have said it. Instead, he says, okay, and turns to the apostles and say,
what about you?
Does this shock you? What are you going to do? What will you do? What will you do?
Does this shock you? Really lays it on the line. Like, he is literally asking them yeah. to literally eat his flesh and drink his blood. And it is shocking. We should be shocked like the apostles were, because he is asking us to do something shocking.
And he doubles down on it. He says, the words I have spoken to you are spirit and life. Like, he's saying, I'm telling you the truth.
This is the spirit of what I am. This is the life which I am offering you.
Right.
These words, these particular words.
And so he turns. So, and a lot of his disciples leave. A lot. They can't take it. They can't. I'm not buying that. I knew he just fed the 5,000 of us in the desert from a couple loaves, fishes, but
cannibalism is a step too far.
Yes. So then he turns to the 12 and says, you going too? Like, he was willing to watch him walk away. And Peter says, Lord, we believe everything you ever said. No, he says, where else could we go? Like, he's that is like the lowest level of endorsement possible.
It's not I understand you or I believe you. It's just I don't get it, but what other choice do we have?
What he says is, I trust you.
Right.
That's really what it is. Like, I don't understand what you just said. That sounds really weird and bizarre, but I trust you. As for me and my house, I will serve the Lord. Did Joshua understand everything that the Lord was asking him to do and taking over from Moses? Probably not. Did he know where the people of God were going from that point on? Doubt it. But he trusts the Lord. And when you look at Ephesians 5, that the second reading, does when a wife subordinates herself to her husband, and when a husband pledges to give his life for his wife, do they understand completely what that teaching means?
On the day that you make you stand in the front of the church and you make your wedding vows, do you know what you're signing on for?
Completely? I mean, you have an idea of it, But do you know what what form it's going to take and what road that will take you on? And
you have no idea.
You have no idea, but you trust. And that's what I think that's really what the readings are about this week.
It's radical trust in God.
Right.
As somebody who loves us and wants to espouse us and have that deep relationship with us. But it's that leap of faith.
Yes.
I trust you that you have my back, that you love me, that you will take care of me and protect me, and that you have my good will, my interests at heart.
Right. Even when I don't understand, even when the times are hard, even when you've asked me to follow a teaching that is hard, like, say, natural family planning and no birth control and children are coming at a rapid pace or infertility or children getting sick
or spouses getting sick
or financial troubles or any of that stuff.
War, famine, disease.
Right. But I think especially when the teachings of the church are hard to follow. But you trust. I trust in you. I don't understand why you want me to do this, but I will because I trust in you. So that's how these readings stack up for me. And it might not be the usual approach that you hear it in the homily.
I thought Father this morning did a pretty good job of.
Yeah. I couldn't remember. As I was preparing my notes for the podcast, I couldn't remember anything specific that he had said. I just remember thinking, well, that's a pretty good homily on this.
He talked about like it as a continuation of the bread of life and.
Mm-hmm. Usually there's the approach is to talk about the Eucharist in this one, to kind of keep talking, you know, to continue that, which is a valid approach to these readings. That's for sure. Yeah. The Spirit gives life. All right. I think that should do it. We do want to take a moment to thank our patrons who make it possible for us to create Raising the Bets, including Robert G., Gregory S., Timothy B., Kimberly P., and Remedios S. Their generous donations at sqpn.com/give make it possible for us to continue Raising the Bets and all the shows at StarQuest. You can join them by visiting sqpn.com/give. So that's it from us. If you have any feedback for us, you can send it by going to sqpn.com/bets, that's BETTS, or the SQPN Facebook page, facebook.com/StarQuestMedia, or send an email to bets@sqpn.com. We'll put links from our discussion in our show notes at sqpn.com. We greatly appreciate it. It really helps a lot. Please go to Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts and leave us a very nice review. And share the podcast with your friends. Help us grow our community of listeners. Until next time, I'm Dom Bethanelli.
And I'm Melanie Bethanelli.
Thank you for listening to Raising the Bets on StarQuest.